Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to NPR News. So glad you could be with us today. Does the news overwhelm you? Does it leave you feeling depressed and powerless sometimes? These days, more people seem to feel that way, and more people are deliberately avoiding the news. Headlines over the last few years have really been distressing. A war across the ocean in Ukraine, political polarization here in the U.S., wildfires, and police shootings. When people are asked why they don't take in the news, they often say it leaves them feeling depressed, or stories seem disconnected from their lives, or that the news is repetitive, or all of the above. So today, I want to take some time to talk about what's called news fatigue and news avoidance. Why does it matter? And are there ways that news that can be delivered that leave us feeling less worn down and more hopeful? I definitely want to hear from you. We want to take your phone calls on this. Have you ever been intentionally in a situation where you're avoiding or limiting the news you take in? Why? Do you find you feel overwhelmed when you follow news events too closely? And what are you doing to stay informed without feeling overloaded? Call us at 651-227-6000. Again, the number is 651-227-6000. You can also call 800-242-2828. You'll find me on Twitter at Angela Davis MPR. Let's bring in our two guests for the hour. We have with us Amanda Ripley. Amanda is a journalist, a book author, and the host of the Slate podcast, How To. We wanted to talk with her because of a piece that she wrote last month in the Washington Post called "I Stopped Reading the News. Is the Problem Me or the Product?" Amanda is joining us from Washington, D.C. this morning. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Angela. How you doing? Good to be with you.
Thank you for your time today. And here in the studio with me, I have Benjamin Toff. And Benjamin is an assistant professor at the University of Minnesota at the Hubbard School of Journalism and Mass Communication. Benjamin is also a senior research fellow at the Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism at the University of Oxford in England. Now, he studies how people's trust in news is changing and why some people avoid the news. He's been looking into this for years. Welcome to the show, Benjamin.
Thanks for having me.
So, Amanda, I want to start with you since it was your piece in the Washington Post, an opinion piece that really grabbed our attention. You describe being someone who used to read and watch and listen to the news all the time. It reminds me of me back in the day. Take us back to when you consumed a lot of news. What were some of your daily habits?
Yeah, you know, it was something that one of the best parts of my job as a journalist was that I could read the news and call it work, right? Mm-hmm. Like that was a legitimate way to pass the time. So I've been a journalist for 2 decades, and I used to spend hours every morning reading multiple newspapers. In my office at Time Magazine, I often had my TV playing CNN on mute. I listened to NPR in the shower. And, you know, I actually enjoyed it. So when I'd go on vacation, I'd go out of my way to still do these things. And it felt like, on the one hand, it felt like my duty to be informed as a citizen and obviously as a journalist.
Yes.
But also, you know, I kind of loved it. You know, it made me feel more curious, not less at the mm-hmm. time.
Yeah, and I can relate to that curiosity. You feel more equipped to, you know, even be more curious and try to look for answers and have a better understanding, which would, in you know, then help make you become, you know, a better journalist.
Exactly, yeah. And so it was like this way to feel like you were part of something bigger, to feel like you were part of a bigger conversation, to feel like you were always learning. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, maybe half a dozen years ago, very slowly, almost too gradually to notice, I started feeling like the news was getting under my skin. You know, after my morning reading, I'd feel so drained that I had trouble writing or doing anything creative, which I really had to do for my job. I just felt kind of lethargic, unmotivated, and the day had barely begun. So, you know, I started shifting when I consumed news. You know, I'd wait till lunchtime, and then it was like late afternoon, and then it was, you know, after dark, like a vampire. It was like I was just experimenting with what would allow me to have enough optimism, energy, and agency to do the things I needed to do as a parent, as a journalist, as a human. And then I could, like, you know, immerse myself in the misery of the news.
Mm-hmm. Because getting your news at the beginning of the day, which makes sense, but it can also make you start your day in a mode of, well, you're worrying.
Yeah, and you kind of feel like, what's the point, right? I mean, that's an exaggeration, but sometimes it feels so depressing that you start thinking, well, why am I going to go spend, you know, 3 hours researching this story if none of this really matters? Because, you know, there's a bunch of different things happening here, right? So let's just name it. I mean, I think one thing is a lot of the places I was writing for were no longer believed by huge portions of the country, and at least not in the way they once were or the way I wanted them to be. So there was that sense of kind of impotence and powerlessness. And then on top of that, the news was everywhere. Like, it's like aerosolized now, right? Like, you can't contain it to part of your day because you, every time you open your phone, every time you, you know, turn the corner, it ambushes you. So that was another change. And so, you know, like a lot of people, I started to try to dose the news. I cut out TV news altogether.
Why TV news did you cut that out?
So, you know, there are important exceptions to this, as you know, right? But in general, I find that a lot of TV news is, I mean, you know, TV is a more emotional medium. That's part of its power, right?
Power of, like, video, just, right? The
yeah,
images.
I mean, you can do things with video you could just never do in print, or even on the radio. So, that's good when it's used for good, but it's also very salient. And there's, you know, there's been a good amount of research over the years. I used to cover disasters, and, you know, for decades, we've known that the more people watch footage of terrible, catastrophic things happening, even if they're very far away, the more they suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder and other things, even to the degree that sometimes they suffer as much or more than the people who were directly impacted by disaster. I'm thinking here of research into the Boston Marathon bombing, into 9/11, the Oklahoma City bombing, especially kids. Like, so, you know, for anyone listening, make sure your kids don't watch TV news footage of terrible things, because kids have no way to understand that. You know, when you see the Twin Towers collapse on TV over and over again, it's not happening over and over again. It's the same thing, right? Over and over again. And that's true for police shootings, all kinds of things. So in general, TV news is not good for your health.
Well, I mean, I want people to know that we're going to talk about solutions and how to manage this news consumption. But I also want to point out that in your article you wrote, you went to a therapist. And what did your therapist tell you?
Oh, she told me to stop consuming the news.
And so she knows you're a journalist.
Yeah. So, I mean, but she also knew that at that point in my career, I didn't need to be, you know, tracking every twist and turn of every story because I wasn't a beat reporter anymore. And so she was right, but it also felt wrong. You know, it felt like quitting the news felt like quitting the world. And it's important to be informed, as you said earlier. So.
Yeah. So yes, it feels wrong. I am relating to you very heavily on many of these points. And I'm going to pause you there for a moment because I want to bring in our other guest, Benjamin, who's a journalism professor who's sitting here with me in the studio. Benjamin, does this sound familiar to you, what Amanda is describing in her consumption habits and then now avoidance habits?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it both is on a personal level, it sounds familiar. I can empathize with a lot of what she's describing, and some of I had some similar experiences myself when I made the transition from being a working journalist to being an academic and going to graduate school. But the other thing is, you know, I've been interviewing news avoiders or people, sort of extreme news avoiders, people who consume almost no news at all for several years now, and many of the things that Amanda is saying align very much with the kinds of things that those individuals have told me and my collaborators on that project. I've worked with somebody in the UK and somebody in Spain as well on studying news avoidance.
What are the reasons people give to you about why they chose to start avoiding the news? What was the turning point for them, or what was happening that they felt that was necessary?
Sure. So a combination of things. I mean, it's not any single thing. And there are different types of news avoidance as well, I should say. You know, we're talking a lot about news avoidance among people who actually consume quite a bit of news. And they're sort of finding that they're just consuming too much. They're trying to find ways of screening out all the news that they feel like they're coming in contact with inadvertently, incidentally, as they're trying to go about their day. And they're really trying to find strategies for navigating that kind of environment. There's another form of news avoidance, which we focus a lot on as well, which were people who really consume almost no news at all, but they didn't necessarily think of themselves as actively avoiding it. So these are people who it just rarely was something they actually encountered. They didn't really grow up in families in which people talked about the news all the time.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't the same kind of strong sense of civic duty that it was important to pay attention to news, and so they didn't really see much of a point to doing so. And so they didn't always think of themselves as actively, intentionally avoiding it, but the end result was often the same, that they really weren't consuming hardly any news. And they often had some similar kind of reactions to news when we talked about it. So often people, both of these groups, would talk about how news made them feel depressed, too much doom and gloom. They felt like it ultimately didn't matter whether they paid attention to news, because what could they really do about any of these horrible things that they were encountering on television or elsewhere? Mm-hmm. There were in the U.S. when we interviewed people, there were a segment of these individuals who really talked a lot more about a sense that news was not trustworthy, that it was biased, that it was and so when they said that they're actively avoiding it. What they really meant was they're actively avoiding sort of mainstream news that they considered to be, unbiased and ideologically on the other side from them.
And you have shifted your research from focusing on news avoidance now to trust in news.
Yeah, it's a separate project, but very much a lot of overlap between the types of things we're hearing from people and in some cases the same types of individuals. One of the things that is a strong predictor of trust in news is accessing news more frequently.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about news fatigue, news avoidance. Have you intentionally avoided or limited the news that you take in? And tell me why. Do you feel overwhelmed when you follow the news too closely? And what are you then doing to stay informed without feeling overloaded? Call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. We're already getting in a lot of phone calls, so let's talk with some of our listeners. In St. Cloud, we have Liz on the line. Good morning, Liz, and what do you want to share with us?
Yeah, I've felt a lot of fatigue during the pandemic. I'm a social studies teacher, so I really make an effort to stay on top of the news.
Yes.
And I don't know, even since, I mean, it's been overwhelming partaking of the news. So my strategy has been to just eliminate 24-hour news. You know, I don't partake of any of the kind of 24-hour breaking type news cycle, because I think that just really ratchets up emotions. And I also, when we teach news literacy, what we want students to understand is that news and events take time to break, and you need to be patient. You can't trust everything that's just coming out immediately. And, you know, first eyewitness accounts, you know, everything can be flawed. You have to really take time for truth. And so that's one part. The other piece is you have to have a variety of sources that you're pulling from, and just pulling from your news feed or your feed in TikTok or whatever sort of social media you have isn't what I'm talking about. You know, you have to actively seek out investigative journalism. You know, you have to invest in good news sources, you know, like NPR or the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, you know, and all those things are just really kind of old style and simplistic, and, you know, students oftentimes roll their eyes at me. But I think when there isn't breaking news, and when we talk about something that's happening and we keep talking about it in class and we see how the news around it has shifted, they sort of start to feel that that's true. You have to
how the developments, really, how a story can change, yeah, and you get more information, and it's not, yeah, what it first appeared to be. Liz, may I ask, yeah, you said you're a social studies teacher. What grade, yeah, or how old are the students?
Juniors and seniors. And, you in know, I mean, okay, the other piece, too, is the media matters, too. The media, really, Ezra Klein had an article in the New York Times last weekend about, mm, the media is a message. And I really believe that, you know. So students who are only getting news flashes from TikTok, you know, come into class sounding like they know something, you know, and they do. They know something they heard.
Right, right.
So,
all right.
So it's, well, an avenue to... Yeah, sorry. Go on.
Liz, no, thank you for calling in. Let's take another phone call in Minneapolis. Robert is on the line. Robert, go ahead. We can hear you. What did you want to share with us?
Good morning.
Hi.
You know, for me, I've been kind of avoiding news for years, and part of it is that with the advent of that 24-hour news cycle, if there isn't actual things happening, then we go into as your guest pointed out, we rehash the same thing over and over again, and two things happen. One, you're not getting any new information, and it does have an emotional toll. And number two, inevitably, you are going to build in bias because the people delivering that material over and over and over again eventually have to say something, and they're just going to start saying what they think. And so for me, I honestly for years have limited it to things like, you know, NPR Headline News or Reuters or AP, and look at the facts. And then if there's something that I'm particularly concerned about that really I need to pay attention to, then I can dig further and then I can go and look at other sources or look deeper in. But, you know, to go and sit in and just have this, you know, whether it's CNN or Fox or wherever, running constantly, it's not productive for me. It doesn't provide me what I need from news, and it provides me a lot of what I don't need.
Mm-hmm. That 24-hour constant flow of news, it can be hard to avoid it. Maybe if you're not even seeking out the news, it just comes at you. Amanda, what do you hear in some of the folks who just called in, those two listeners who just shared what they're experiencing with news fatigue?
Yeah, I love hearing how people manage this. I mean, one of the great things about, you know, confessing this to the world is that I've been hearing from a lot of people like Robert and Liz who have their own strategies, who can, you know, relate and also have come up with strategies, you know, to limit their consumption. And I like what Benjamin said that, you know, there are different categories here, different kinds of avoidance. And it sounds like for some people, it's like a total fast, like news fasting, like you're really consuming almost no news. And then for other people, and I think this is kind of where I would land, it's more like you're dieting, like you're constantly trying to be very selective about what you take in. And it's kind of exhausting right now. And I think a lot of this is on us as journalists, not all of it, but I think a lot of it is that we need to evolve what journalism is and does to take into account what humans need today and also what we know about human psychology, which we didn't know, you know, when we started figuring out what, you know, what traditional journalism would look like. We've evolved to distribute and commodify the news, but we haven't evolved the way, say, economics has evolved in order to take into account human behavior. So I think that is something that gives me a lot of hope because, you know, Robert put it nicely when he said, you know, what I need from the news and what I don't need from the news. And I think it's really a good time to ask ourselves as journalists and as readers or listeners, what do we want the news to do? Like, really, what do we, because we don't really need it to do, you know, who, what, when, where, as much as we did, because that's coming at us from 1,000 different sources from major news. But we do need why, you know, we do need more explaining. We do need more hope and more agency and more dignity and more connection. So there's a lot of things we really desperately need in a fast changing world, in a diverse country. We need good information and ways to make sense of it. But I think we need to evolve what journalism looks like to serve those needs.
Mm. And you said something, Amanda, you said it feels like a confession talking about this. And I can relate to this. you wrote in your article in the Post that one day a journalist friend confided that she was avoiding the news too. And then you heard it from another journalist and another. I've actually gotten into arguments with some of my close friends. And when I say, like, you should probably just not, you know, take in so much news. Mm-hmm. And because the argument is, no, we have an obligation to know what is happening in our community so that we can be involved and know what is happening with our elected leaders so that we can take action. And that, you know, many people believe our democracy is at stake. So by avoiding the news, you're being irresponsible. Benjamin, have you had these sort of encounters or what would you say about that argument of like, no, it's not about like protecting your mental health. It's about you need to know what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot of people struggle with this. People who do feel this strong sense of civic duty to pay attention, to be informed. And they sort of trying to grapple with how to balance those concerns with how the news makes them feel. And I think we have to be honest, though, that like a lot of what we consider news isn't really doing that kind of thing. And there are a lot of people who will say, as I think Amanda articulated very well, you know, withdrawing from the news actually makes them feel like they are better able to be good citizens, to be able to engage, to be able to thoughtful about things that are happening. Whereas actually consuming tons and tons of news makes it more challenging. I mean, I don't want to sort of belabor the metaphor that Amanda used, but I think dieting is not a bad way of thinking about this. That if you really think about a lot of the news content that we have out there, or what we consider news, you know, it's kind of like Doritos. Like they've been sort of manufactured in a way to be sort of get the most reaction from people, to be addicting, to you know, and it's really not good for you. It's all
junk food.
You can't
have one Dorito.
Right? Exactly.
You have to keep going in and reaching for more.
But if you think about news as a form of you know, sustenance, you're trying to find a sort of nutritious blend of it that is going to actually be healthy for you. Too much is not a good thing. Too little is also not a good thing. And so finding the sort of best way to navigate that in a way that's actually going to be healthy for you is I think, a challenge for a lot of people, but it's not impossible.
All right. Well, we're going to take more calls from our listeners. I want to introduce this fact, though, and this is from Amanda's reporting. New data from the Reuters Institute earlier this summer showed that the United States is one of the highest news avoidance rates in the world. About 4 out of 10 Americans sometimes or often avoid contact with the news at a higher rate than at least 30 other countries. And consistently across all countries, women are significantly more likely to avoid the news than men. In St. James, let's talk to Melanie. Melanie, what did you want to share with us about news fatigue and news avoidance?
So, yeah, thank you. I wanted to share that I used to get up every morning early before work to turn the news on and see, you know, what's been going on. And I find that I haven't done that for a long time because I don't know what I can believe is true or not anymore on the news, you know. And I don't have time to do all that research to go and see if it's true. And I also never felt like living in the United States that was something I'd ever have to think about.
So why are you distrustful, Melanie?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Why are you distrustful? Why do you have, why do you question what you're hearing or reading or seeing is true?
Because of what all of the fighting on social media and just the bickering back and forth. And when you hear one side of the story, but then you hear the other side of the story, I'm one who could be easily swayed in a lot of things. And so I have a hard time going, okay, so then what's true? You know, and I'll tell you what, I really only get my news now from NPR because I don't like to turn the news on the TV ever. I just don't, and I don't do it ever anymore. And it is too bad. And I just heard you guys talking about how people are less informed and how that might not be a good, how you're not a good citizen then. And I didn't really think about it like that, but I still am like, I don't know if I can trust what I'm hearing on the news.
Well, Melanie, thank you for calling and thank you for sharing that. That's Melanie in St. James. Benjamin, again, you said about 3 years ago, your research or more recently has started addressing trust in news sources, trust in news. And what can you tell us what you found out so far?
Yeah, so I mean, one of the things that we've really noticed in our research on trusted news is the important role of habit and familiarity in shaping sort of why people trust certain sources of news versus others. As I alluded to earlier, you know, one of the biggest predictors of trust is actually using news more frequently. And so much of the way that we go about using news is rooted in habits and routines that people do it sort of automatically without necessarily thinking on a sort of daily basis about why they're doing what they're doing. And a lot of people's habits have changed over recent years as the media environment has changed. You know, the kind of typical spend an hour reading a paper in the morning or watching mm-hmm. the evening news. These are habits that a lot of people grew up with, but that have really changed as they have other sources of information, all throughout the day. Our lives are just structured in a different way than they maybe once were. And so part of it is that people's, they don't have the same kind of relationship with individual news organizations like they once did. Instead, they're kind of inundated all day long by headlines and tweets and snippets of information.
And you heard her say, Melanie said that the debate now, so like she'll read or hear something and then later she'll see people arguing about, you know, different interpretations of the same event. So then that, you know, makes you question should I have believed that?
Yeah. And I think some of that is an inevitable consequence of we have a much more varied media system, which is, I think, in some ways a very positive thing. So it used to be, you know, all the information was coming from a very small set of news organizations with a very similar perspective. And so you're hearing from a wider range of people, which I think is good. But for a lot of people who may be less certain about where they stand politically, or how to make sense of the different sources that are out there because maybe they don't pay as much attention in general, it's hard to navigate. And people feel mm-hmm. very confused by it all and sort of this sense that they have to be generally skeptical of everything they encounter mm-hmm. because that otherwise you might be duped or taken in.
And Amanda, what do you think about that? You know, the listener who called in says that, you know, seeing this debate and all the fighting and bickering sometimes on social media over a news event makes her then question, was the original source of her information, was it true?
Yeah, and I think Melanie put it perfectly when she said, you know, I don't have time to figure this out,
right?
Like, this should be the job of journalists. I mean, I was on one radio show and a caller said that he, like, routinely, after he listens to a really depressing NPR story, he goes online and tries to find some example of organizations trying to respond to that problem so that he can have some hope. And then he shares it with his friends on Facebook so they can have some hope. And it was really like a beautiful adaptive response, but also kind of heartbreaking because that really should be our job, right? And it is also our collective job as a country to rebuild trust. And, you know, right now, no national news source is trusted by more than half of American adults, which means we have no common ground truth. And it's going to be hard for us to do anything as a country, anything big, anything ambitious, anything important, until we get that fixed. And that interestingly brings us full circle back to TV news. I mean, I think although I was talking about all the problems with TV news earlier, it's also true that, you know, local TV news is still very powerful and more Americans get their news from local TV stations than from cable TV, newspapers, or national network TV, according to a 2020 Pew poll. And when it comes to political news, the local TV audience is particularly diverse politically, economically, racially. So there is still an opportunity to fix local TV news because it's still a little more trusted than national news. But it has historically been incredibly sensationalist, you know, focused on sound bites, very superficial. So there are specific stations trying to do better and innovate, and they are having good results on local TV. But I think it has to happen much faster. And I would also just acknowledge that, you know, Angela, I think you know more about TV news than I ever will.
Yeah, so A lot of it I will not share. But Benjamin, you wanted to add something.
Yeah, just the first thing that Amanda was just saying, it reminded me of something that one of the news avoiders I was interviewing in Iowa several years ago was saying it. You know, he said he wished that there was a place he could turn to like Wikipedia where they just gave you the facts of what happened and they had confirmed it and it was black and white and to the point and you know, and he could trust it. And when he described that, I was thinking, you know, what he's describing sounds like what journalism is trying to do. But he would never think to actually turn to a news organization for that purpose. And I think that's part of the challenge, is that people have sort of internalized this belief that professional journalists can't be trusted. And so where do they turn? And so for many, they just turn it off entirely.
Mm. All right. Well, we are going to take more phone calls from listeners as we talk about news fatigue, news avoidance. And I'm asking, have you been intentionally avoiding or limiting the news that you take in? And what are you doing to stay informed, but also avoid feeling overloaded or overwhelmed by the news? Call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. You can tweet me at Angela Davis, NPR. Now back to our conversation about why some of us are avoiding the news. It's called news fatigue. My guests today include Amanda Ripley, a journalist, book author, and the host of the Slate podcast, How To. We're talking with her because of an opinion piece she wrote last month in the Washington Post. It's called "I Stopped Reading the News. Is the Problem Me or the Product?" A great article. I would highly suggest that you check it out. In the studio with me, I have Benjamin Toth, an assistant professor at the University of Minnesota at the Hubbard School of Journalism and Mass Communication. And Benjamin is also a senior research fellow at the Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism at the University of Oxford in England. He's been researching news avoidance and trust in news. And taking your phone calls, too, have you intentionally been avoiding or limiting the news that you take in? And what are you doing to stay informed without feeling overloaded? Call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. We have lots of listeners on the line. Let's get to these calls in Elk River. Barbara is on the phone. Barbara, thank you for waiting. And what do you want to tell us?
Yes, I've been avoiding the news, not entirely. I do listen to NPR and MPR. And after I've heard one news cycle, that's it for the day. I won't listen to it over and over again. And I look at the headlines of the major news outlets like New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, and I'll sometimes go into it. But I mostly avoid the news because it doesn't make me sad or upset. It makes me angry. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times I'm on the road when I'm listening to the news, and I don't want to be irritated with other drivers and irritated with about the whole world just because I just heard about a Trumper who's pleading guilt, has a plea deal, and then what's happening in Ukraine with the nuclear power plant, and then indigenous people not being listened to on climate change. Just what we just heard from Phil Picardi, I'm ready to explode. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to dial it back to make myself a calmer and happier person and make not take out my anger on all the people around me.
Oh, Barbara, I think you speak for a lot of folks who are aware of how they feel and then how it affects their behavior and how they interact with other people when they do listen to the news. And I appreciate you calling in and sharing that. Amanda, you, in your piece, you talk about solutions and you talk about hope, agency, and dignity. And first, tell me something about hope. Let's talk about hope. What do you mean that news should bring more hope?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because it sounds very woo-woo, right? It's very...
And oh, I'll take it. I need some woo-woo. Please, let's do this.
All right, this is a woo-woo free zone. Mm-hmm. So David Bornstein, who is a journalist I really admire, who co-founded the Nonprofit Solutions Journalism Network, he says hope is like water. You need to have something to believe in. Mm-hmm. And if you're in the restaurant business, you're going to give people water, right? Even if it's not your main obsession. But you understand human biology. And he said, it's weird that journalism has such a hard time understanding this. Mm-hmm. People need to have a sense of possibility. And I think that gets back to what Benjamin was saying earlier, is like, yeah, we want to be informed, but is the news informing us? You know, we're only getting half the news on any given story. There is often a whole piece of this that, and I'm guilty of this for sure, in the past, I wouldn't necessarily include bright spots or moments of hope or things people were doing to try to respond to big problems because it didn't fit the narrative. It didn't feel like as urgent as the rest of my reporting. And so I think this is actually really, really important. And I'm glad we're talking about it because this is something that a bunch of journalists are trying to get better at. And realizing that one of the things your audience needs is hope, not manufactured hope, right? But hope, as David calls it, hope with teeth, hope that is reported out, that is on the ground. I mean, anyone who spends any time in any community, whether it's in Syria or Bangladesh or Columbus, Ohio, knows that even in the darkest moments, there are glimmers of hope. And why not include those in the story?
Hope with teeth. I'm taking that all in. And I do agree with you. People do need a sense of possibility. And how about agency? What do you mean when you say agency, Amanda?
So agency is the feeling like you and your fellow humans can do something, even something really small. And that's how we convert the anger that Barbara is feeling, rightly so, into action, right? It's how we convert frustration into invention. It's a sense of self-efficacy that is essential to any functioning democracy. And I think it's important to just put a little footnote to that, which is, it doesn't mean that every story on climate change has to remind you to recycle, right? Because we know that those things are not going to be enough at the individual level to contain climate change. But when we do stories about how communities are collectively responding or trying to respond to climate change, we feel vicarious agency. So it doesn't have to be literally what you yourself can do in your own kitchen today, this minute, although that's great, right, when that applies. But it can also be stories about how people are responding. And there's an example, you know, of this. The New York Times recently did a story about how the city of Houston moved 25,000 people experiencing homelessness into their own homes. And it was a rigorously reported story with plenty of caveats. But reading it, you start to feel that spark of agency. Even though I don't live in Houston and I didn't do it, it does raise my question, why isn't my city doing this? Are they doing this? So it's a way to hold other places accountable, which journalists love accountability, right? That's one of our main jams, right? But this is a way to do it through telling stories of people trying to respond to problems instead of just marinating in problems.
Benjamin, what's your take on that? What can we as journalists do differently that would instill hope, that would make the news just easier to consume?
Yeah, I mean, I think I absolutely agree with everything Amanda was describing. And I think that it does resonate with many of the things that news avoiders that I've interviewed say that they're looking for from news. However, I should say, you know, we have to keep in mind, though, there's a large segment of the public who are more indifferent towards news than necessarily have this kind of strong aversion to it, that like some of the callers who have been describing their reactions. And for them, often, you know, their lack of consuming news has more to do with a sense of, you know, they just want news that sort of gets the point, that's just very black and white, that tells them what they need to know and then allows them to move on with the things that actually matter more to them in their day-to-day lives. And so part of this is also about kind of packaging news in a way that can fit the kinds of, you know, other things that are competing with people's attention in their daily lives. And so delivering the news, well, I think that, you know, things that we're talking about in terms of the content of news are very important. Finding ways of delivering news that kind of meet people where they are with their busy lives, I think, is another part of this. And some of that has to do with the mode of news. So we've talked a little bit about some people having a kind of strong reaction to television news in particular, given the images and the video. So finding maybe whether it's print, maybe an email newsletter form of news or podcasts or something they can sort of listen to as they're doing something else, you know, finding the kind of mode of delivery of news that fits people's daily routines better. So it doesn't feel like a chore or something that's going to be a major sort of emotional obligation or burden in their lives.
I think personally, as a talk show host and the producers I work with, we're very intentional. We talk a lot about, okay, let's like take a problem and try to dissect it, provide some understanding, some history of it. How did we get here? But also we always have to focus on what's the solution, what's working, what's changing it. So that's important to me. And I think that is what a lot of people are craving. Like, don't just tell me the bad thing, but what's working, who's changing it, and who could I connect with, who can be a part of the change? Because that's what gives us hope. That's what gives me hope.
Absolutely. And connecting to the relevance in people's lives. I think that's one of the other major things we hear is people feel like so much of what they're seeing in the news, it's not clear to them, particularly if you're not paying close attention to the news.
Why should I care?
Yeah.
Why does it matter, and why should I care? So creating connections among people.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, let's take more phone calls as we talk about news fatigue and news avoidance. In Golden Valley, Lori's on the phone. Good morning, Lori. What did you want to share?
Yeah. Hi, good morning to you, as I'm standing here in my neighborhood. One thing I'm thinking about is that when I watch the news or I read the news, which I do every morning, I always read what I want to read and make sure I understand all the perspectives of people from different angles. And then at some point, I want to turn it off because I want to think. And I want to sit down, peace and quiet, and think, what does that mean to me? And how does that affect the people here in my community, in my neighborhood? How does this affect how I'm going to go about my day today, the people at work? And so I think news is a really good supplier of information. And I like when it's just factual and information. But then I sort of want to take it into myself and run because no one else's experience is my experience. And I want to make sure that I'm utilizing everything that you guys and everyone's telling me to make sure that I live my day throughout to be at its fulfillest so that I'm making sure it's good for not just me, but the people around me and the others that I meet. So, and I like being thoughtful, by the way. So
yeah,
it really is helpful in that way.
Like a very thoughtful person. Thank you, Lori. That's Lori in Golden Valley. Let's go to Chanhassen and talk to Mary. Mary, what do you want to add to the conversation?
Well, I'm an older listener than some of your listeners. I'm 73 years old. I'm retired. I don't have a full plate like a lot of people do. So I can, I have more time. Mm-hmm. However, I also deal with anxiety, and I want to make sure that I'm not getting overloaded with things. Excuse me. I think that if you develop kind of a basis for and try to stay on top of the news, and I do a better job with national than with local, but then you feel like you're somewhat informed, and you can choose to watch news or read the paper, which I do, and just discern from experience and from, my age and what I've done in the past. And I say, well, I know enough about that right now. I trust my judgment. I think I've made good decisions in the past, and I'm trying to see both sides of the issue. But then when I make a decision about what I know at the time, I say, well, yes, I've reached a conclusion on that, or things can change in the future, but I have enough information and I don't need to get more right now.
Mm-hmm. So it takes some patience, as we said earlier, and give it some time and being willing to step away and process what little you've taken in the moment. That's Mary and Chanhassen. Let's go to Duluth and talk to David. David, what do you want to share with us? What do you want to tell us about news fatigue and avoiding the news, perhaps?
I just think one thing that's been kind of missing is that, in the past, you listen to different news sources to get a nuanced view, but about the same story, but now we're talking about two different realities, almost.
Mm-hmm. So right? Something will happen, and you'll hear two very different versions of it in the news.
Yeah, well, not only almost two different total realities, like January 6th, where one was storming the Capitol, and the other news story out there was that this was a tour group. Right? I mean, it was just so far off from each other that it was hard to really connect them to see other people buying that alternate reality is very disheartening.
So what do you do? Do you try to go to different news sources, or do you try to stick with ones that you trust that you believe are telling you the truth?
I try to primarily stick with ones that where I developed a system for myself. What is their history? Have they attempted to address their biases? And I try to consume internationally as well as local.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. That's David in Duluth. What do you think about what David is saying about again two sides of the story? Just Benjamin, your research has shown people can tell that there there's people have a certain, I want to say, slant, or they feel that the media has there's too much opinion in it, and so you have to then decide who do you want to believe.
Yeah, it's a very prevalent theme in a lot of the research, both on trusted news and in news avoidance, that people feel this way. And you see some of these, I think, sometimes we pay so much attention to how polarized the country is in terms of right and left, but we don't pay enough attention to what is often even a larger gap between people who are disengaged from politics and uninterested in it from the other segment of people who are hyper interested in it. And that's part of what has happened with our media environment is if you want to spend every waking hour paying attention to news, particularly very, you know, versions of the news that present a completely different reality from the other channel, you can do that. And you know, if you want to spend your time doing other things, there are many, many more media choices and options available to you than in the past. And so part of what's happened is we've kind of, you're having more kind of fragmentation of the audience in these ways, which does make it harder to have any kind of shared sense of reality.
And Amanda, what news sources have you found that you feel that leave you feeling less depressed or more empowered? Are there some maybe news organizations or sites that people may not be aware of that you have found to be helpful in your own journey with yeah. news fatigue? And
yeah, and I've been collecting lots of other suggestions from all kinds of folks since the story came out. But one of the ones I want to mention CBS Sunday Morning, which I think is an example of a TV show that is more nutritious and designed for human consumption, since we've been kind of, you know, railing on TV news. And I also want to mention the Christian Science Monitor, which was not a newspaper that I really read. I thought it was religious. It's not actually religious, although it has a religious affiliation. Anyway, one of the cool things about that outlet is that since its beginning, 100 some years ago, it was always focused on trying to be there for people, to do no harm, right? So each issue features reporting from around the globe, brutal realities, vivid photos, but there's also embedded in it hope and agency and dignity. And every story, just to take one quick example, every story includes a brief explainer called Why We Wrote This, which Ooh. Explains why they decided to do the story. So that's a way in which you're showing your readers respect and, you know, being more transparent. And all of that's really important, I think, in rebuilding trust.
Tell me more about CBS Sunday Morning. What do you enjoy about that program?
Well, you know, I think it's an example where there is, you know, some in-depth, longer segments, right? For TV, some of those segments, correct me if I'm wrong, are really quite long. So they're doing some serious reporting, but then there also be stories that spark wonder or hope, or, you know, sometimes they are famous, right, for some of their nature stories or science stories. So there's a kind of a mix of things that keeps you from just falling into paralysis, right? Because I think that's the problem with kind of this persistent negativity bias that the news has and that, you know, by the way, our brains have, right? Like I notice in myself when I'm scanning the headlines, if there is a positive headline about some point of progress, I will sometimes skip it. Like I'll move on to the headline that's really more alarming and scary. And now I force myself to go back, read the story, you know, like just try to overcome my own negativity bias. But I think that's something that journalists could help us with.
We just have about a minute left here. Benjamin, any advice for people who are listening who really are trying to get this under control and manage it, stay informed, but not be overwhelmed?
Yeah, so I'd say two things. One is, you know, focus on the things that are important to you. You don't necessarily try to take in all the news all at once, but there may be, you know, things at the local level in particular that you're really concerned about where you can see a way to make an impact that you can sort of tune in selectively to the kinds of stories that you're most interested in that resonate with you in that way. The other thing is, you know, I love the caller who talked about sort of taking a minute to be thoughtful and contemplative about the news that they're encountering. And I think many of us do know people who pay a lot more attention to news than we maybe personally do. And I think it's perfectly okay to rely on them. And this is something that some of the news avoiders we talk to will say themselves, that they have a kind of division of labor in the home where they rely on a spouse or a partner mm-hmm. or a parent to keep them up to date with what's happening, that they can talk through and process what's happening in the news. So it's not just a solitary thing you're doing on your own. And that can be a really healthy thing to do as well.
Slow down. Thank you so much to our two guests and to all our listeners who called in. We've been talking with Benjamin Toff, who is an assistant journalism professor at the University of Minnesota, as well as Amanda Ripley, a journalist, a book author, and the host of the Slate podcast, How To. Her Washington Post opinion piece is called "I Stopped Reading the News. Is the Problem Me or the Product?" Thank you, Amanda. Thank you, Benjamin. The conversation today was produced by Maya Beckstrom. Be safe, everybody. Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder that if you want to catch my show in real time, tune in and call in weekdays at 9 a.m.